Good morning, everyone. This hybrid Zendo Zoom practice is amazing and challenging at the same time. But I want to begin by wishing you a happy Jizobon. You may not know that today is Jizobon in Japan, I think. Depending on the region and whether they're using the lunar calendar or the contemporary calendar, there is a festival, a celebration of Jizo Bodhisattva, who is the protector of women, children, and travelers, and it's a festival, particularly for children. Those of you in the Zendo will see three images of Jizo Bodhisattva on the altar this morning. You can go look up closer afterwards. Actually, can someone bring me the small one on the right-hand side? Yeah, go ahead. And I'll just show the people on Zoom. Thank you. So this is a little ceramic Jizo that we got in Kyoto on one of our trips over recent years. He's pretty cute, huh? So the reason I was reminded of this, I mean, I hadn't even thought about this being Jizobon, but I was invited to do a talk yesterday morning on Zoom, on Jizobon, for a group called the Living Interfaith Sanctuary. And it's a group of people who meet monthly, or maybe more. They have interfaith text study groups. They're really lovely group of people from different faiths, and this is their practice to study and worship together, drawing on many, many faiths. So they had decided that that yesterday morning's meeting was going to be on Jizobon. And so they asked if I could. I did something for them a couple years ago, maybe. So I agreed, because I already had some material prepared from when we, a couple of years ago, I did a series called Field Guide to the Bodhisattvas and talked about each of a number of bodhisattvas. And I'll get back to what a bodhisattva is in a minute. But first I will just give you a little picture of a Jizobon. Okay, and we're going to... River, could you remind me how to...
Function F5.
That's what I just tried. It's not...
Are you in PowerPoint or Zoom?
I'm in Zoom and PowerPoint. I mean, I'm screen sharing the PowerPoint. Will it not let me do it once I'm on screen share?
It should.
Maybe you could look. Oh, I didn't hold it. Okay. Okay. So you can see here. Little images of Jizo Bodhisattva decorated with pinwheels and flowers and freshly crocheted little red toques. And this would be what would be done with families, with children on Jizobon. But Jizobon is part of a larger traditional set of celebrations called Obon at this time of year in Japan, in which family ancestors are honored with offerings and ceremonies and dances. And I have to say, the best fireworks I have ever seen. Amazing fireworks in Japan. So it's kind of like a Japanese Day of the Dead. It's a joyous and celebratory time. And families travel to their ancestral hometowns. So people flood out of the cities. It's really hard to even get tickets on the trains at this time. People going back to regional or rural locations where their parents or grandparents or their families originally came from before the mass exodus to the cities after World War II. So then people gather at the cemeteries and clean the graves meticulously, decorate them with flowers and offerings of food and sake, and gather there and eat snacks. And the idea being to invite the ancestors to come and visit at this time of year. And then at the end of those this span of several days, the ancestors are sent back with bonfires and beautiful lanterns, sometimes lanterns floating on rivers. So it's a really lovely time of year. Obon has its origins in the Chinese Hungry Ghost Festival, a festival to or ceremonies to kind of offer peace and rest to spirits that are restless and in the hungry ghost realm. And that Chinese ceremony has both Buddhist and Taoist influences. But the Buddhist roots go back a very long time to a story of the Buddha's disciple Moggallana, who was renowned for his clairvoyant powers. He had ESP. And after his mother's death, he had a vision of her suffering in the realm of the hungry ghosts. The hungry ghosts are those beings who are never satisfied, craving skinny little necks and distended bellies. And he was so concerned that he asked the Buddha, "What can I do to help my mother in the hungry ghost realm?" And the Buddha said, asked him to make offerings to the monks who had just completed their summer retreat. The rainy seasons, the monks would stop wandering and stay in one place and do intensive meditation. So he was to make offerings to the monks and pray for his mother's release from suffering. And he did that. And in doing that, he saw deeply into his mother's life and what she had given to him. She had maybe not been an easy person. Maybe she'd had some suffering in her life and had difficulties in raising him. But he saw deeply into her love for him and the truth of her life, and she was released. I imagine he was released too from any hurts or resentments he might have carried, as so many of us do in our relationships with our parents. I think we can learn from cultures that honor and support an ongoing relationship with the dead. We know that we carry our dead, those who have gone before, in our hearts, and that our relationship with them continues in many ways as we mature, as we open in our hearts. Those relationships can stay stuck for many years. So there's something deeply moving about this story of Moggallana, and I think that speaks in a sort of archetypical way to our desire for our parents to be free from their suffering, ultimately, so that they can love us the way we would wish them to. And that wish extends beyond death. These ceremonies, you know, these obon ceremonies, I think, have a way of cultivating good relationship with the dead in our own hearts. Once a year, there's this symbolic inviting of the dead and saying goodbye again, knowing they will return next year at Obon. But, okay, back to Jizo. Today I want to talk particularly about Jizobon, or Jizo Bodhisattva. And Jizobon is this festival that recognizes his role as protector of children. And it includes, as I said, songs and dances and sweets and decorations, decorating images of Jizo. Now, for those who may be new to this word bodhisattva, it simply means awakening being or awakened being, with the understanding that awakening is for the benefit of all, not just for one's personal salvation. And a bodhisattva is, although it's often sometimes called a Buddhist deity, I don't think that's accurate. I don't think a bodhisattva is a deity or a saint. Sometimes they're called Buddhist saints, and both are inaccurate. I think bodhisattvas are kind of symbolic embodiments of archetypal qualities like wisdom and compassion, given form in Buddhist iconography. So there we see a picture of Jizo. And bodhisattva vows, which we do chant, and we will chant at the end of the Dharma talk, express our aspiration to live in this world as a bodhisattva for the benefit of all, and to awaken. So the image and the function of Jizo Bodhisattva evolved as Buddhism moved through Asia, from India to China to Japan. And his name means earth storehouse. So you see these two characters here. The first one's earth, and the second one is storehouse or womb. So earth storehouse, earth womb. His name in Sanskrit is Kshitagarbha, Titsang in Chinese, but I will call him Jizo because it's easy and very familiar to me. His Japanese name, which also means Jizo, is the Japanese pronunciation of those two characters. Little is known about his origin in India, but the association may go all the way back to the Hindu earth goddess, Prithivi, who appears in the story of Buddha's enlightenment. Some of you may remember that when the Buddha was sitting under the Bodhi tree, the story goes, after some days, he was probably getting pretty tired and sore, and the tempter demon Mara appeared. Just, that happens to us when we're sitting, doesn't it? What are you doing? What is the point of all this, you know? So Mara appeared to the Buddha and said, "Look at these vast armies, my demon armies. They will bear witness to my strength and my enlightenment. Who do you have as your witness? I don't see anybody here. You're just sitting here under a tree by yourself." And in this beautiful gesture, the Buddha reaches down and touches the earth. It says, "The earth is my witness." And lo and behold, an earth goddess rises up out of the earth, wrings out her wet hair, and the water from her hair floods the demon armies away, washes them away. But how many of us, in times of doubt and despair and confusion, have gone to a place where we can touch the earth and be restored? I do. One of my most reliable ways. Jizo features prominently in a Chinese text that bears his name, the Sutra of the Past Vows of Jizo Bodhisattva, which tells the legendary story of how, when the Buddha was dying, he expressed concern about who would carry on his work of liberating all beings from suffering. And Jizo Bodhisattva appeared and addressed the Buddha, saying, "Even if their good deeds are as little as a hair, a drop of water, a grain of sand, a mote of dust, or a bit of down, I shall gradually help living beings to liberation. Please do not feel distressed over beings in generations to come." So that's how Jizo Bodhisattva became known as the Bodhisattva of Great Vow, this great vow to continue the Buddha's teaching. So in early Indian images, Jizo appears as a typical bodhisattva in the robes of Indian nobility, you know, with sort of jewels and draped robes. So you wouldn't even really guess that this was Jizo Bodhisattva from this image. And then in Chinese images, he's quite richly dressed and wears a crown, a hexagonal crown, and carries a staff with six rings at the top. And the six rings jingle as the staff is struck as he walks. And this is, I believe, a reference that might go back even to the Jain tradition of warning little creatures, little insects and spiders and creatures, that a human being is coming, and so they can run away, have a chance to run away. It makes me think of us hiking with bear bells, which actually is not only just to protect us from the bears, but to protect the bears from us, because obviously if a bear attacks us, the bear that ends up losing its life oftentimes. So we need to, just as Michael and I do at home, we try not to encourage the bears, and we try and chase them off, banging on pots and pans if they come around. The other thing about the six rings on the jingle staff is that they symbolize the six realms of existence, which Jizo travels. So just to review those realms, okay. I'm just backing up a little. In his other hand, he carries what's called the wish-fulfilling jewel, which is the jewel of the Dharma, which fulfills the wish to be free from suffering. And this is a Japanese Jizo, where he becomes more and more presented as just a simple monk in simple monk's robes. So here is a Tibetan Tanka showing the six realms. At the bottom is the hell realm. And these could be construed or taught as in a traditional way as in terms of reincarnation from one realm to the next, depending on what one's previous life has been. But also, I think these really have a lot of resonance with realms that we inhabit in our daily life, and so I found them quite meaningful. So the hell realm is the realm of our primitive mind, our reptile brain of fight, flight, or freeze. It's the realm of unregulated rage or fear or dissociation. Rage would be the fight, fear would be the flight, and dissociation would be the freeze. These interpretations of the six realms come from, I'm sorry, his name, very popular writer on psychology and Buddhism. It might come back to me. At any rate, the hungry ghost realm is, how do I go back? There. The Hungry Ghost realm is the realm, as I mentioned, of insatiable craving. Never enough. Whether it's food or material things or money, never enough. Or pleasure or love, never enough to fill that inner void. That's the Hungry Ghost realm. It's the realm of addiction, and it's the realm our culture really reinforces. Never enough. And then skipping over to this side is the animal realm, which is the realm of our basic kind of instincts, our basic needs, sex, food, rest. I would say it's not as tormented as the hell realm or the hungry ghost realm, but it's very self-centered. It's like, I want what I want, and I want it now. And not aware of others, the needs of others. I think actually the name of this realm does a disservice to animals. But it's talking about that aspect of our lives. And then we have the what's called sometimes the jealous titans, the asuras. And this is the mind of envy and competition. It's the type A folks who always want to be better than somebody else, can't endure being less than the richest, the most successful, good-looking, or most spiritual. So that's another kind of torment, isn't it? And then up at the top is the God realm, which is the mind of ease and complacency, which is also self-centered, and it's also easily destabilized. It's really easy to topple right out of that God realm into one of those other realms. It's nice while it lasts, but it's a kind of hazardous realm, and it's not a realm where we can awaken to the nature of being. And whoops. That realm is the human realm, which is over to the right of the God realm. And the human realm, we're not as tormented as the jealous titans in the human realm, but we aren't satisfied in the human realm. It's the realm of self-improvement. We always want to do things a little better, but we also, in the human realm, have the capacity for self-awareness, for insight into the causes of suffering, and for the arising of bodhicitta, the mind of desire to awaken for the benefit of others. So the human realm is the best situated realm for Dharma practice, and so as challenging as the human realm can be, we can be grateful that we have that capacity. And we can be aware of when we slip into some of those other realms, and call upon the Dharma to help us, and practices that can help us. So, with all that said, Jizo is a bodhisattva that travels the six realms, helping all beings. So in Japan, you will often see all over Japan, at crossroads and in temples, images of six Jizos. Symbolizing the six realms. Jizo underwent even further transformation in Japan, taking on a kind of youthful or even childlike appearance, like this little one that I showed you, and this little one here with its rosy cheeks and its funny little toque. As the association with children became stronger, particularly children who had died in infancy or been stillborn or aborted. Jizo's role as a protector of children, also extended to being a protector of women. And that probably goes back to that early association with the earth as the womb of life in India. And Jizo has served as a healing figure for women's health problems. There are Jizo shrines devoted to easy childbirth, etc. In medieval Japan, there were associations formed mostly by women devoted to Jizo, which sponsored children's festivals, the Jizobon, honoring Jizo, and revering him as the savior of the spirits of children who had died early. In a time when pregnancy and early childbirth, as in other parts of the world, were fraught with risks, these beings, beings who died early, were seen as not having fully entered the human world. I remember in China, when we traveled to China in the very, very rural ethnic minority areas, children, we'd see children with these little embroidered hats on with demon faces on the back to frighten away the demons that could harm the little children. And traditionally in China, children would be given a kind of false name, like little rat or something that wouldn't attract, that would kind of deflect the scary, dangerous hazards. And they wouldn't be given their full name or used their given name until they were 1 or 2 years old. The image in folklore, here's an example. This is what you see all over Japan. This would be maybe in this to the side of a Buddhist temple. But you also see them in Shinto shrines. See this little one with the little panda earphones on. The traditional image was of little children. I don't know if you can see them here. They often look, sometimes they look like little toddlers, on the banks of the river Sai, which divided this world from the afterworld. And they pile little stones in little stupas. And then all day long, they work piling up these little stones. And then at night, demons come and knock over the little stupas like piles of blocks until Jizo comes and wraps the children in his robes and takes them on to the afterlife. It's a rather grim story, but one I think that reflects the powerful grief of parents who have lost a child. It's like no other grief. And this yearning to protect that extends beyond death, and wishes for a Jizo Bodhisattva or angels to come and protect that child. I used to work as a hospice bereavement counselor, and I remember parents who had lost a child saying, "Oh, I just wish I could know she was or he was okay, and not and happy and not suffering." So that wish to protect is so strong. So to this day in Japan, you will find locations in Buddhist temples of all kinds, clusters of what are called Mizuko Jizo. Mizuko literally means water child. And that name may be associated with the amniotic fluids at birth or with the endless flow of life and death. And these stone images are childlike, as you can see. And they're often given offerings of pinwheels or toys. And many of these are offered by women or family couples who have had an abortion. And there are little tablets sometimes. Sometimes these messages are written on little red bibs on the Jizo images or on little wooden tablets like these. And they say things like, "Please forgive us. We, your parents and siblings, are in your debt," or "I'm so sorry, please rest in peace." And then they're signed, mostly by the mothers, but sometimes fathers or even the whole family. So I think maybe we can learn something from this compassionate response of Jizo Bodhisattva to the circumstances of women's lives, or families' lives. Some Western Zen centers have begun to offer Jizo ceremonies for those who are grieving the death of a child or who have experienced a stillbirth, miscarriage, or abortion. One of these centers is Great Vow Monastery in Oregon, where Michael and I used to practice quite often. Jan Chosen Bays, the abbot, shown here somewhat in a somewhat blurry picture, for many years worked as a pediatrician in a center, a clinic for children who had been physically or sexually abused. And she was often called upon to testify in court proceedings. She saw some of the most painful results of human greed, hatred, and ignorance. And she had to bear witness with a calm body, unflinching eyes, a compassionate heart, and a clear mind. When she discovered Jizo Bodhisattva, he became her patron bodhisattva and the source of the name of the monastery she founded, Great Vow Monastery, and the inspiration for a peace pilgrimage to Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 2005 that Michael and I participated in. It marked the 60th anniversary of the atomic bombings there. It was also Chosen's 60th birthday. She was born on the day Nagasaki was bombed. And as raised in a Quaker family, she was aware from early childhood of what had happened on her birthday. So she decided to make this pilgrimage. And participants, there were about 30 of us, and we took with us an image of Jizo Bodhisattva for each of the 270,000 people who died within the first year of those bombings, many of them children. And the images were mostly in the form of prayer flags. You see here Chosen with a stack of prayer flags. There's an example of one. But also people made small clay and fabric Jizos that we took. And as more and more people all around the world learned about this pilgrimage and made Jizo images, the number grew to over 500,000 that we took and offered and displayed in different temples and museums in both cities. It was a very, very profound experience because, of course, we went to the memorial museums in both cities as well and spoke to people who now, at that time then, in their 70s and 80s, who had been maybe teenagers at the time. And something about the 60th anniversary, this was well acknowledged, brought out a need in these people to tell their stories that they hadn't told in the earlier decades. So that was very, very moving for us, for all of us. And I imagine that now new Jizo shrines are being created in northeast Japan for the children who died in the earthquake and tsunami, a nuclear disaster 10 years ago. And today, still all over the world, there are living bodhisattvas of many faiths doing the work of easing the suffering of children who are homeless, displaced, hurt, frightened, and those grieving the loss of children. The First Nations communities feeling the pain of those unmarked graves discovered on the grounds of residential schools in different locations across Canada. Those parents separated from their children through the dislocation of fleeing their homelands. So I'd just like to invite you to reflect on your own lives and on the lives of maybe people you've met or heard about who do the work of Jizo Bodhisattva. There are many ways in this world to travel the six realms, embodying Jizo Bodhisattva, not turning away from suffering. Sometimes that means taking care of basic needs, food, clothing, shelter, water, health care. Sometimes it means sitting still, calm, open-hearted in the presence of another's pain, giving the gift of no fear. Don't think bodhisattva work means preaching or even literally saving lives. Most bodhisattva work is just how we live in the world as authentically and fully as we can, awakening in each moment. I'm going to show you one more slide. This one is located at the entrance to the cemetery at Rinso-in, which is the temple where Shunryu Suzuki Roshi was abbot before he moved to San Francisco and founded San Francisco Zen Center. His son is abbot there now, and his grandson runs the temple, and we have visited 3 times with Sangha friends. We've made 3 Sangha trips to Japan since 2010, and would probably have made another trip this year were it not for the pandemic. So I hope we get to make one more trip to visit, because it's a really lovely experience for those. Probably some of you out there have been. Yeah, I see Susan. It really gives the feeling for life in a busy local temple, and how that really serves its community and offers Zazen practice. We sat in their 300-year-old Zendo with local people who came in the morning to sit. So at first glance, this looks like so many Jizo images, but on closer inspection, you realize those are not children, though they look childlike. It's an old man and an old woman. And this is a Jizo who specializes in protecting against dementia. Those of us among us who have cared for elderly parents in recent years suffering from dementia, even in its milder forms, or other afflictions of aging, can appreciate the role reversal involved, the endless patience and kindness and sometimes firmness involved. And all of us know how we fall short of our ideas of how we should be, of our highest aspirations. And that's when we learn what great bodhisattva vows really are. They're not bludgeons to make us behave. They are vast safety nets of connection that hold us always. And it helps to have the archetypal bodhisattvas like Jizo. And they exist, I think, in some form in all spiritual traditions, in some form. It helps to have them to give us a boost and a reminder. They're good companions for the long haul. So let us now chant the bodhisattva vows and the end of Dharma talk chant. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.